This is LA's home for the Dodgers.
Somehow makes the play.
And you're listening to Off-Season Dodger Talk.
He bobbles it, falls face first, somehow picks it up, throws behind his back with his face in the dirt, throw to first base to Gonzalez and makes the play.
Call 866-987-2570 and talk to your host, David Massé.
Welcome to Nissan Dodger Talk. David Massé with you. As Bob Schmidt just mentioned, until 8 o'clock right here on AM 570 LA Sports. We are with you and going to entertain you in many different ways. Right, Ronnie Fazio? One way we will entertain you tonight, Rick Dempsey, the man that picked up Oral Hershiser after the final out of Game 5 of the 1988 World Series. One of the stuntmen from the 1988 World Championship team will join us at the bottom of the hour. Can you believe it's been 30 years since the Dodgers won the 1988 World Series? Not really 30 years, but 2018 will be the 30th anniversary of that great season. And if you lived that season like I did, that was one of the most special Dodger seasons ever and one of the most entertaining Dodger seasons from start to finish. And I would say 2017 was right up there with it. Obviously, the ending was not the way that we wanted it to be, but still 104 wins and the way the Dodgers won those games was as entertaining of a season as I can remember. And I'm with you, too. As Dodger fans, all that matters is if you win the World Series. But I came away with the feelings after that season saying, you know what? Those guys satisfied me as a baseball fan, even though they didn't win the World Series. And there's been a couple of Dodger teams like that. I mean, how can you not say the 77 and 78 teams did not satisfy you that year? Obviously, losing to the Yankees is more irritating than anything else. But, you know, you look at even some of the other teams that never got that far. The 85 Dodgers, one of my favorite teams. The 1991 Dodgers, who I maintain the best team that never made the postseason. The 83 Dodgers, those type of teams were really good that didn't win the World Series. But I know, you know, at FanFest, you talk to Steve Yeager, you talk to Ron Say. There's the standard with the Dodgers that if you don't win the World Series, you're not really recognized as one of the great teams in the franchise's history. But 2017 was right up there as one of the more entertaining seasons, but 1988 was really special. And Rick Dempsey will join us at the bottom of the hour. Today is Jackie Robinson's, what would have been, 99th birthday. So we will celebrate Jackie Robinson's birthday. I went into the archives and found a real powerful speech from either 1963, I believe it was 1965, with what he was talking about, and it was a speech made in Birmingham, Alabama, and that's where the whole march from Selma to Birmingham was really happening in that time period, and his words kind of make you believe it was right around that time. So we'll let you hear from Jackie Robinson, the civil rights activist, because he was so much more than just a baseball player, and on his birthday, I believe that's what we should celebrate, especially with the climate in the country right now. We should celebrate what Jackie Robinson stood for. 866-987-2570 is the phone number, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. The Dodgers announced some of their non-roster invites to Big League Camp, and the four guys that I think are really interesting if you're a Dodger fan are outfielder DJ Peters, who is from Glendora High School. He's one of the best outfield prospects, not only in Dodger camp, but also in all of Major League Baseball. Also, another one of their really good outfielders, Yusniel Diaz, will be in Big League camp this year. And the two catchers that we've heard a lot about that at one point in the next couple of years will probably be catching at the big league level, Will Smith, who was a first-round pick a couple of years ago, and K-Bear Ruiz, who was the Dodgers minor league player of the year last year and played at Rancho and a little bit at Double A, will be at big league camp. And that can only help those two young men develop and help their development accelerate and get to the big leagues even sooner. I would say at this point in time, Will Smith would probably be the third catcher when you talk about the depth chart of the Dodgers. You always have the two at the big league level, and then you have the next guy up at AAA. And Will Smith might be that guy, next man up, if Barnes or Grandal gets hurt at some point in time, because he's a little bit ahead in development stage than Ruiz is. But Ruiz is going to be something special. I was so impressed talking to him when he came to Dodger Stadium in September when he was named the minor league player of the year. And he was so mature for his age. He's only about 20, 21. And being a catcher, he understood, and it fits tonight because Rick Dempsey was one of the best defensive catchers of his generation with the Orioles and the Dodgers for 24 seasons. And Ruiz is actually taking English classes that he started all the way back when the season started last year when he was staying with a host family in Rancho Cucamonga, because he wants to be able to communicate with his pitchers. And English is a big part of that. So that showed me a lot, that he wants to not only cultivate relationships at a higher level with the Spanish-speaking pitchers, but also the English-speaking pitchers. And we all know that baseball is a universal language. But, you know, for a guy to make that effort and learn a second language, that says a lot about who he is. And K-Bear Ruiz is going to be a great one. And I can't wait to see him play at Dodger Stadium. But I still believe his development's a little bit behind Will Smith, who we would probably see if there was an injury to Barnes or Grandal at some point this year. Also, another guy that I'm very interested to see in spring training that got a major league invite is Matt Beaty, who's 24 years old. I hope I'm saying his name right. He's a very interesting player, 24 years old. He's a corner infielder, third base, first base, played a little second base, and last year at Double-A, he hit .326 and had an OPS of .883. So that might be a name to remember, because he may be a guy the Dodgers go to as far as depth-wise, not only this year, but maybe in the near future as well. So remember that name, Matt Beaty. And Matt, I hope I'm pronouncing your name the right way, because you're a really good player, and can't wait to meet him in spring training. And I'll be out there beginning February 18th. The Dodgers pitchers and catchers, like I mentioned, will be reporting in 13 more days, and everybody is still wondering, I guess, whether or not Yu Darvish will be one of those pitchers that reports at Dodger camp. And after FanFest, I'm a little less optimistic that he will be. If you take what Farhan Zaidi and Dave Roberts told us at FanFest, it's looking less and less likely the Dodgers would be able to fit Darvish onto their roster and still remain underneath the luxury tax threshold. Now, for the Dodgers to be able to do that, reportedly they would have to trade Matt Kemp and or Yasmani Grandal and his $9 million of salary that he just won at arbitration. Now, I know Logan Forsyth has been kicked around, but I just don't see Logan Forsyth being traded because of how valuable he is to that Dodger infield. If you trade Forsyth, you're weakening yourselves at second base and also at third base. Forsyth handled the hot corner pretty well when Justin Turner was injured. And I know Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez can play second base, but do you really want to lock those two guys into one position? And I think their value is versatility. They may not like it, but the versatility of those two guys to move around and play multiple positions increases their value to the team. So if the Dodgers were to shift some salary off this roster, the two guys you would think they would be able to do it with are Matt Kemp and Yasmani Grandal. Now, the Dodgers have not been able to move Matt Kemp, and part of the reason why is there's a shrinking number of trade partners that would match up that need Matt Kemp. Obviously, in the National League, not too many teams believe he could play left field at a high rate anymore. If you look at all the defensive stats and metrics, he's at the bottom, really at the bottom of all those defensive metrics for left fielders and outfielders. So that leaves the American League, and there's so many teams now, I would say at least half, that are trying to tank their season and try to go the Astros and Cubs way of building their franchises. So why would they take on even half of what Matt Kemp is owed? And the Dodgers kind of need a team to do that. Now, me personally, with Andrew Friedman's relationship and just the number of teams the Dodgers have made trades with since he got here. The Rays seem to be one of those teams that could use a guy like Matt Kemp to be their DH. But they're not competing this year. Why do they need Matt Kemp? So that's made it problematic for the Dodgers. Not only has it stalled the free agent market, but it also has made it extremely more difficult to be able to trade Matt Kemp. Now, I'm a believer that having Matt Kemp in camp is not the worst. If he's healthy, and from what I've been told, I think I told you first that he had lost about 20 pounds and is in better shape and has realized what he has to do at this stage of his career to try to lessen the burden on his hamstrings, he's a pretty good hitter. What did he hit last year? First 2 months combined, April and May, 10 home runs, 30 RBIs. That was one of the best offensive starts that any outfielder had last year until that right hamstring came back and bit him again. Finished with 19 home runs. So if he's healthy, he's pretty good. Now, going back to Darvish, yes, I believe he has waited this long to hopefully see whether or not the Dodgers can move some salary and to be able to fit him in and stay underneath that tax threshold. It still hasn't happened, and maybe he's still holding out hope. Part of the reason why he really liked pitching for the Dodgers is they're a winning team. He likes L.A. Also, too, more importantly, Farhan and the rest of the front office gave him information to be a better pitcher. And number three or four, whatever, well, there's probably four or five things, but the other two are Rick Honeycutt helped him simplify things and really make those weapons that he had, which were seven different pitches, and really shrink them to three or four and help him simplify things on the mound where he's not thinking too much. Also, too, Clayton Kershaw told me at FanFest, they've been playing catch. They've been catch partners all offseason long, and Darvish really looks up to Kershaw, and they enjoy being on the same field together for a whole offseason at Kershaw's high school, being catch partners. So all those things have really been a factor in why Darvish wants to come back. Will it happen? Farhan said it's in a single-digit percentage of the chances of it happening. So I just don't see it really formalizing or materializing for the Dodgers to be able to bring Darvish back. But I will say this, until he signs with another team, don't close the door on Darvish and the Dodgers. 866-987-2570 is the phone number. Pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. When we come back, we'll hear from the great Jackie Robinson. It would have been his 99th birthday today, and Rick Dempsey will join us at the bottom of the hour right here on AM570 LA Sports. Happy birthday, Jackie Robinson. It would have been his 99th birthday today. What a man, what an impact he had on this country. This is Nissan Dodger Talk. David Vasse with you until 8 o'clock right here on AM570 LA Sports. And Martin Luther King said it the best. He said Jackie Robinson was the original sit-in when he broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. And, you know, you just look at what he did on the field, and that's just so small when you talk about his impact on society here in the United States. And he was always not only just a baseball player that was striving for better, and he was a guy that was a civil rights activist after he stopped playing. And he was a guy that we found out in Ken Burns' documentary that he would have fundraisers at his home where he lived. I believe it was in Connecticut. That's where he retired, or upstate New York. I believe that's where he retired. But he would have fundraisers for Martin Luther King at his house and have people over and really do those kind of things. And he was with Martin Luther King on the March to Washington right there where Lincoln Memorial is. And he was a guy that really cared about making an impact beyond baseball, obviously. And since it is his 99th birthday today, I thought we'd play a little clip from one of his great civil rights speeches. And this took place in Birmingham, Alabama, around 1965.
I don't think you realize down here in Birmingham what you mean to us up there in New York. And I don't think that white Americans understand what Birmingham means to all of us throughout this country. When we think about the little kid being tossed from one side of the street to the other by the tremendous force of this hose, and we think about Oh, this picture just sickens me. This big, brave policeman down here with his knee on the throat of this lady. And the problem of it is, ladies and gentlemen, is that this same picture of the dogs and of this policeman with his knee in the throat of this lady, it's a picture that's being portrayed throughout the world. And I think the conscience of America is beginning to awaken. I think the first steps that were made here by the Birmingham businessmen, the Dr. King and the other leaders down here, is an indication that perhaps the conscience of Birmingham is beginning to awaken. The only thing that we are demanding is that we be allowed to move ahead just like any other American citizen.
There he is, Jackie Robinson, a speech around 1965 in Birmingham, Alabama. He did so many things. Like I mentioned, he was part of the March on Washington with Dr. Martin Luther King and really was a great advocate for everything that he stood for. And also, too, you know, if you look more into the history books, you'll see that he was very, very engaged in trying to change things, not only by having these public speeches and being part of these public marches, but also, too, you know, he sent some strong worded letters to JFK and LBJ to try to get things changed. And he was not afraid to let his voice be heard. And obviously that's why his impact on this country and the love for Jackie Robinson goes beyond baseball. And it's rightful that the Dodgers' first statue at Dodger Stadium is the statue of Jackie Robinson. And then you saw the Rose Bowl follow suit, and now there's a statue of Jackie Robinson in front of the Rose Bowl in a football uniform because he was so great at UCLA. So happy birthday, Jackie Robinson. He will never be forgotten. Today we celebrate what would have been his 99th birthday. 866-987-2570, pound blue. For our AT&T subscribers, the Dodgers are just 13 days away from pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. And, you know, Money brought up a great point when I was on with Petros and him earlier today, and it's something that cannot be forgotten as far as the Dodger rotation. Last year they were so deep. Say what you will about Brandon McCarthy, but they had a guy that they could go to, and Brandon actually pitched pretty well the first 2.5 months of the season, until the yips got him again and he started to have physical limitations as well. But the Dodgers had Hyunjin Ryu coming back, and now you look at the Dodgers' depth and where it stands this year in spring training, it's completely different than where it stood a year ago at this time. The Dodgers are giving some of their younger pitchers opportunities when they're needed. You look at Brock Stewart. This will be year three where he's getting an opportunity. You're looking at Walker Buehler, who's going to be a starting pitcher. No more relief pitching for him. He's going in as a starter. And how many innings can he pitch? Not more than 150. I would find it very hard to believe that he could do that, considering he barely pitched 100 innings last year. That's the guy that is the wild card in this season. A year ago at this time, when he was healthy, we were talking about Julio Urias. Unfortunately, he had that shoulder surgery, and now he's sidelined, and to be optimistic would be to say that he could pitch in the big leagues in July or August. I don't see that happening, and it may very well not happen, but Walker Buehler is that guy now, and he's had Tommy John surgery, and he looks healthy. He's throwing close to 100 miles an hour, but with young pitchers, there's that throw hard. There's always that learning curve where they have to understand you can't just try to strike out everybody. And with that comes command issues. Even Clayton Kershaw had that his first year in 2008. So you got guys like Brock Stewart, Walker Buehler, and also Dennis Santana, who had a great year and was put on the 40-man roster. Those are the guys now the Dodgers are giving opportunities to when they want to skip Kenta Maeda in the rotation and they don't have a day off. Now, to be honest with you, if you look at the schedule this year, there's more days off than there were any of the previous umpteenth years because of the new collective bargaining agreement. The players wanted more days off for travel, etc., and they got it. They basically got a salary cap too, but what they were focusing on was getting better travel days and days off at home, which allows the Dodgers now to not have to kind of scramble to find ways to give Kenta Maeda extra days rest. And you're going to see a lot of teams do that because they have the same schedule, which will allow them to skip starters that they want to skip and essentially have a six-man rotation. Now, when you say a six-man rotation, you're basically saying you're going to have six guys on a regular schedule. That's not the case with the Dodgers, but you're going to have to rotate a sixth pitcher in, whoever that's going to be, one of those guys that I mentioned or somebody else when you have to give Maeda an extra day off. But the extra built-in days off now that have been added to the schedule are going to help the Dodgers maneuver the roster and maneuver the days when they give Ryu and Maeda, and who knows, even Alex Wood if he needs it, or anybody else that needs it. Really, the only guy that doesn't want it, or the only two guys that don't want it, are Clayton Kershaw and Rich Hill. 866-987-2570 is the phone number. Let's go out to Manhattan Beach. Gio, you're on Dodger Talk with David Vasse. Hi, Gio.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for taking the call, and excited that we're starting to talk about stuff that is so imminent. So I'm getting excited, but I'm also getting a little bit worried about two things, and I'll, you know, let you kind of guide me to the direction I should tell my family and friends so I sound cool.
Oh, that's scary.
This weekend, yeah. Well, I mean, hey, you're on the team enough, and, you know, it's just one of them is Grandal. Like, granted, like, he had a great season 2 years ago and then kind of fell off a little bit last year. Like, what are the odds of us being able to move him? Because I feel like he still has somewhat of a friendly contract for a team that would want him. And then what will it look like? Will Kemp ever actually make it on the field if we can't move that contract?
All right. Thanks for the phone call, Gio. Number one, Grandal, yes, you would be able to move him probably around the trade deadline because half of that $9 million would go down and another team would probably be more willing to take on $4.5 million. But if he's performing well, why would you want to do that? And I think that's what the Dodgers are hoping that he does. He performs well and has that carrot dangling in front of him, a free agency at the end of the year. And I don't have to tell you that a lot of players, when they have free agency at the end of the year for the first time, really find a way to play their best to try to get the biggest contract. So that's working in the Dodgers' favor. It's working in Grandal's favor. As far as Matt Kemp goes, from what I've been told, it's a very strong possibility now that he'll be in camp with the Dodgers. Opening day, still a big question mark. It depends on how he performs and what the and how not only how he performs on the field, but how does he mix in the clubhouse. And by the way, Matt Kemp's not a bad guy. Yeah, he was kind of a diva the first time around, especially with all his success, and it was his team. But it's a completely different situation, and he's a good guy. I don't think you would call Matt Kemp a bad guy. Would you call him a diva the first time around? Yeah, that's fair, but I wouldn't call him a bad guy. 866-987-2570. And by the way, we have a lot going on tonight with Rick Dempsey coming up in a couple of minutes, but tomorrow night I will let you hear Matt Kemp for the first time in a long time. Is he coming on the radio? No, but I probably am the last LA media member to interview him in long form when the Braves came to town here in Dodger Stadium, and the majority of the conversation was about his feelings playing for the Dodgers and the feelings he has for the Dodger fans. So I want to share that with you tomorrow night. And also, too, one of the new and key relief pitchers for the Dodgers, Scott Alexander, will also join us tomorrow night as well. So a big show tomorrow night. We have three consecutive Dodger Talks for you tonight through Friday night, 7 to 8 o'clock right here on AM 570 LA Sports. Let's go out to Chris in Rancho Cucamonga, I assume. Chris, what's up?
What's going on, DV?
Are you in Rancho Cuc?
We saw Rancho Cucamonga, but that's all right.
All right. Yeah, with my man DJ Peters, you got to see that show every night.
Yeah. Got a question for you. Okay. If you had to start your outfield right now with what we have, so Jock Peterson, Chris Taylor, Puig, Matt Kemp, everybody, who do you send down and who do you put on the bench?
Woo! That's a tough question, Chris. Wow, that is a tough question. Puig is in right field. We'll see what kind of Puig we get this year. I think in center field, I'm going based off, let's say it's a left-handed pitcher on the mound. You want to go that route, left-handed pitcher on the mound?
DB, it's always good that way.
All right, left-handed pitcher on the mound. I'm going Taylor in center and Kemp in left. Now, if there's a righty on the mound, I'm going Jock Peterson in left and keeping the other two the same.
Okay.
All right?
I like it.
You like that?
It. And I also got another question for you. How'd you feel about when Matt Kemp went to Atlanta and said he's going to go play with real fans? Don't think L.A. fans didn't forget about that.
Man. Oh, please. He was probably talking about the San Diego fans, Chris.
I will agree to that, but still. You don't
you're trying to start controversy, huh, Chris? No. He was talking about the Padre fans who don't show up.
Oh, okay. Either did Atlanta fans, though.
Yeah, exactly. He found that out quick. All right, Chris. Thanks for the phone call. Let's go out to Boyle Heights. Gaston, my main man, what's up?
Hey, DV, how are you?
Everything's great. Getting that baseball itch, Gaston.
Hey, aren't we all? I'm just itching and ready to go. Maestro Monterrey, how you been?
Everything's great. FanFest was great. Good. Were you out at FanFest?
Unfortunately, I couldn't make it out, but I had you on the radio all day long.
Hey,
so
thank you.
No problem. Hey, listen, I just want to comment. I don't want to correct you, but good old Jackie, he retired in Stamford, Connecticut. Just so happens I finished reading his book.
Oh, so the first time I was right, Connecticut.
Yeah, he was in Stamford. So, anyways, I'm so excited to hear Rick Dempsey. I remember the very, very first Martin Luther King Day, kind of times it with Jackie Robinson. He and my son, my son and I saw him at Mountain High skiing, and my son was all starstruck. You know, he goes, Jackie Robinson, Rick Dempsey. I believe that was in 1989, if I'm not mistaken, right after they won the World Series. So that's a little thing that I kind of remember of Rick Dempsey. He was a heck of a catcher, man. He was all good.
He was great, and he's calling in right now, Gaston, so I got to run. I got to get to a break. Call in tomorrow night, all right?
I will. Thank you, man. Good talking to you. Have a good one.
All right, there he goes, Gaston, and we're going to take a quick time out because the man Gaston was talking about is on hold, the man that hoisted Oral Hershiser up after they won Game 5 of the World Series in Oakland, one of the catchers from the 1988 World Championship Dodgers. Rick Dempsey will join us next on AM570 LA Sports. This is Nissan Dodger Talk. David Vasse with you until 8 o'clock tonight. We will get back to your phone calls at 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. But right now we are joined by one of those magical members of that magical season of 1988 that saw the Dodgers beat the Oakland A's in five games of the 1988 World Series. And who can forget beating the big bad Mets in seven games of that NLCS? He was a catcher for 24 seasons in the big leagues, four of them with the Dodgers, and that's the one and only Rick Dempsey. Rick, thanks a lot for checking in. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, David. And the topic of conversation is something I absolutely enjoy talking about, the 1988 Dodgers.
Rick, it's been nearly 30 years since you grabbed Oral Hershiser in Oakland and picked him up, and you guys won that World Series. Does it feel like it's been 30 years?
No, it really doesn't. That time has just flown by since then, and it just, God, it's inconceivable to think 30 years ago was the last time the Dodgers won a World Series. Because I say the same thing about the Orioles because I was part of that team the last time they won a World Series, so it's even longer than 30 years with them. But what a magical season that was. You know, I played in six divisional titles and three different World Series. I don't think I've ever seen or even heard of a team like the Dodgers ever winning. And like Bob Costas said one time, this is, going in, the worst World Series team in history. And we use that as the fuel to ignite that ball club at the start of the World Series. It was exactly what we needed, and that's how we fed off of the negativity and turned it around to a positive for all of us.
Rick, that was just one of those things that you guys were able to use, but also, too, in the NLCS, I remember David Cohn had a column in a New York paper and really basically said the same things about you guys.
Oh, I know it, and we heard about it all on the bus coming to the ballpark, and even when we left after winning that final ball game, you know, they just said, how was it possible that a guy comes in there almost 40 years old, they were referring to myself, and can actually be part of the winning team that beat the Mets. The Mets beat us all but one game all season long, and I'm sure they just expected a cakewalk. But that ball club, you know, every team says they don't have any quit at them, but this team just did not have any quit. We just totally believed in ourselves. We only had three regular players that played every single day on this team. The rest of it was platoon guys, old guys, young guys, you know, that were either on their way out or just coming in, one or the other. And it was a quite incredible team, what we were able to put together under the leadership of Tommy Lasorda, and even more so under a leadership of Fred Clair, who I thought was the most incredible general manager for that season I had ever seen in my life, and has become a lifelong friend of mine.
Rick Dempsey is our guest, part of the 1988 World Series champions Dodgers, and also, too, part of the 1983 Baltimore Orioles that won the World Series. And, Rick, I'm so glad you brought up Fred Clair, because I wasn't aware of the story of how you got to be part of the Dodgers in the offseason of 1988. It wasn't the routine type of thing where the team courts a player.
No, it really wasn't. You know, I saw Tommy Lasorda at a fundraising event, and I was scared to death at that time. Actually, I was 39 years old, and I went up to Tommy and said, "Hey, Tommy, believe it or not, I still think I can play. Would there be any chance I could get at least an invitation to spring training?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "That would be great. You've got a lot of credentials. You've won a lot in the past. I'll see what I can do." Well, nothing happened for a couple of weeks, and I didn't hear back from Tommy. So a little voice in my ear that said, "You got to go do this on your own." So right in the afternoon on that day, I just put my rake down, dressed, and I went to the ballpark. I got there around 2 o'clock, and I walked into the office there at Dodger Stadium. I asked the secretary if I could speak to Fred Clair. She said, "Well, of course, but he's in a meeting right now. You'll have to wait." So I sat around for an hour, and I went back up to the desk and asked her again. He said, "Well, he's in another meeting. You'll have to wait a little while longer." So I waited till 7 o'clock at night. So it was 5 hours I sat in that office, and the girl had long gone home.
Wow.
But I said to myself, I think I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to get me to quit because nobody really wants to talk to me at this point. So I said, "Well, I've never quit at anything in my life." I said, "I'm going to sit here till I see Fred Clair walk by and tell me to my face it's over with, and I'll be happy and go home." And I wouldn't hold any grudge against anybody, but I just wanted an opportunity to talk to Fred. Well, he peeked out the door, and I saw him, and I waved, and I said, "I'm sorry, Fred, to hold you up, but I've never quit at anything in my life. I just need a few minutes of your time." So he said, "Okay." He invited me in, and we spoke for over an hour. And I said, "Fred, I know you were in last place last year." I said, "But I truly believe I can come here and make a difference with your ball club. Give me a chance at spring training." I said, "I'll hit a home run every 24 at-bats. I'll drive in a run every 5 at-bats. We'll win the division after being in last place. We'll win the division. We'll win the World Series. I'll catch the last pitch." And I was dumb enough to tell him I'd give him the ball.
Wow.
And I got, I think, just a little over 150 at-bats. I hit 7 home runs, which is one more than I predicted. I drove in exactly 30 RBIs. We won the division. We won the World Series. I caught the last pitch, and I gave him the ball. And that ball is worth a whole lot of money today.
I actually saw that ball. It's at the pop-up museum at Dodger Stadium right now. Fred loaned it to the Dodgers to put on display.
Yes, and it is so odd. If you look at the names on that ball, you probably won't recognize but maybe 4 or 5 of them, and that's it. The rest of them were unrecognizable names. We were no-name guys, and that's okay. We could all live with that. We accepted it. We knew at spring training, we developed quite a ball club at spring training. You know, the regulars and the guys that needed the work were going to play every day, would get the majority of the work to start off the ball games. But as soon as they got their pitches in and their at bats, they threw in the rest of us, and we called ourselves the stuntmen.
Yeah,
and it was amazing because Danny Heap, Franklin Stubbs, myself, Mickey Hatcher,
Tracy Woodson,
Renee, I want to say Gonzalez.
Jose Gonzalez.
Yeah. You know, I mean, those were the guys that went in and cleaned up the ball games and sucked up the rest of the innings. And we just developed an attitude about the way we played together. And Fred Clair, I got to give him a lot of credit. You know, this guy, I've never met anybody. I've been in the game over 50 years. I never met anybody like him that make you feel like you could kill, you know, King Kong. You know, he made you feel like you could win. And we already knew we could win. We all knew we had a ball club. But you have to put it together as a team. And Fred was behind us 1,000%. He believed in John Shelby. He believed in Steve Sachs. He believed in Oral Hershiser and Mike Marshall and, you know, and Kurt Gibson. And the rest of us just kind of fell in line. You know, we knew where our job was. Tommy Lasorda made it easy for us to understand what our roles were going to be for the whole year. We weren't going to play every day together. We were going to go in there when he really needed us the most, and hopefully we'd win a ball game. Well, in spring training, we kept coming from behind winning ball games. During the season, the big guys did their job, but when they really needed us to come through in those tie ball games and come from behind, we were able to do it, and pretty soon we were so confident it didn't matter who said we were no good. We were going to prove how good we really were.
Rick Dempsey is our guest. He was part of the 1988 World Series champion Dodgers team, caught the final out as a strikeout from Oral Hershiser, who struck out, I believe it was Tony Phillips, right, Rick, if I'm not mistaken?
You know, I think you're right. I really think you're right. I mean, I wouldn't bet my life on it, but it probably was. I know that it was a strike three, and I grabbed that ball as hard as I could when I ran to the mound to pick up Oral Hershiser, who I have to say, you know, most valuable player of our team, no doubt about it. But just what we need, it just goes to show you the strength of that pitching staff and the leadership that Oral provided for everybody. You know, those young guys watched him and saw how he orchestrated his game, how he changed speeds on his pitches. That sinker, I've caught 16 Cy Young Award winners during the course of my year. I have never, ever seen a sinker like that or even close to it. Jim Palmer was great, 8 20-game winning seasons, 3 Cy Young Awards, and even Jim never had a season as good as Oral did that year. Tim Belcher fell in line. It was so funny. Tim and I just kind of like best friends on that team. We lived in the same neighborhood. And to watch him the first part of that season struggle through all of his ball games with his fastball and, you know, being up in the strike zone at 100 pitches by the fifth inning. And Fred Clair walked in the locker room in Cincinnati one day and he says, "Well, what do you think of that Tim Belcher?" And he was my locker mate. And I said, "Well, he's the best five inning pitcher that I've seen in this league." And oh my God, I thought Tim, who was a lot bigger than I was, going to pinch my head off. And Fred just kind of laughed about it a little bit because we had just come back and won a big game in Cincinnati at that time. And after Fred left, Tim came up. I thought he was going to punch me in the mouth, which he probably had the right to do. And he says, "Well, why do you think I'm a five-inning pitcher?" I said, "Tim, because I've been telling you, you need an off-speed pitch. If you're going to get deep in ball games, you can't throw the same speed, hard fastball, hard slider the whole game." And then overnight he came up with a split-finger fastball, and he cruised to the end of the season. This guy was unbeatable the rest of the year, and he picked up a split-finger fastball overnight. And I'm so proud of the fact he sent me a baseball from his 100th win and says, "Thank you very much. You were the biggest part of my career. You really got me going. Thank you so much." And I still have it. I'm looking at it on the wall right now. But, you know, Tim Leary was the same way. I mean, wow. I mean, what a season this young guy had with a good sinker. He kind of picked up a little bit from Oral Hershiser. But he, too, hard thrower, all of a sudden, that focus on down and away, the best pitch in the game still is always going to be that fastball down and away, and we had those guys believing in it. Mike Socha, who has gone on to be one of the best managers in all of baseball, same thing, you know. He could lead a pitching staff, and these guys followed like we were Pied Pipers And I'll just never forget how many great games we had. And I've been in some pretty good championship seasons with the Orioles, the Yankees, the Minnesota Twins, you know, who I first started with. But that season right there, it was something very special. Someday people will look back and say, how did those Dodgers ever do it? And it was led by Oral Hershiser, Tim Belcher, Tim Leary, and that bullpen was incredible.
Yeah, it was the most magical summer of my childhood, for sure. The Dodgers' 1988 season culminating in that World Series championship. And, Rick, you mentioned your relationship with the pitchers. You mentioned what Mike Scioscia meant to that pitching staff. Do you feel like the art of catching in that way has gone by the wayside? And it seems like everybody is so fixated on just catchers stealing strikes. Nobody really seems to emphasize how important it is now for catchers to cultivate that relationship you're describing.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm so disappointed. I've been in this game and around this game a long, long time, over 50 years. And, you know, they beat it into us in my first major league camp on how good you had to be defensively. If you're going to catch a major league staff, you better understand what they're like. And the way we went about our job is we spent hours and hours and hours every day warming up guys in the bullpen. They didn't pay somebody to come in there from off the streets or a high school or college kid to warm up guys on the side. They wanted the actual guys who were going to be in the games with these guys to constantly be warming them up, learn the release point, exactly where it's coming out of his hand, every single one of his pitches. That's what's required of a good, solid defensive catcher, leader of a pitching staff, a quiet leader. And when you teach those young guys, you know, how to orchestrate their game and how to call, just say, turn it over to the old guys, let them call a few games for you, let's see how you work through some situations on your own, and eventually you turn that ball game over to the starter like we did Tim Leary, like we did Tim Belcher, and some of the young guys out of the bullpen. When you turn that game over to them and you have total belief they know what they're doing, that's when you make a great major league starter out of them. And that's what those guys became that year, the second half of that season. And, you know, they've lost that, Dave. They've lost the work ethic. And I don't think it's their fault most of the time, because we have good, young, talented catchers at the major league level. But you can tell they've never been taught hardly how to set up behind home plate. And let me tell you what, I don't care what sport you're in. If you can't set up to do your job from the very beginning, the position to shoot a ball from outside the perimeter, you know, to throw a ball to home plate, to catch a ball, to receive a ball in football, you know, how to plant your feet before any of the good stuff happens, you're lost. You're never going to be able to be any good. But catchers today are not being taught exactly how to set up, exactly how to, you know, position their body behind home plate. Every pitcher has a different release point, which means for a catcher, there has to be so much precision at 60 feet 6 inches. You know, and you've got to be precise every single pitch that you give a target for that guy to throw to you. You better be precise at exactly where you set up, how your feet are set up so you can block it if it's no good. You can throw it if you have to. You can receive it and get a strike for a pitcher, which is so important. When you can steal 20, 25, 30 pitches a game, out of the 200 you're going to receive, which is, what, a little over 18%, you figure it out, is you're going to make a winner out of that pitcher. He's going to meld with you. He's going to believe in you. You're going to believe in him, and that's how you win championships.
Well, he knows all about it. Two World Series championships and played for two Hall of Fame managers in Earl Weaver and Tommy Lasorda, the one and only Rick Dempsey. Rick, thanks a lot for taking so much time to really give us some insight on the position that you were so great at, and also that magical 1988 season, and especially on your anniversary, Rick. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. One last thing I want to mention, you know, I played for two different kinds of managers. Earl Weaver was a tough, tough guy, but you learned how to be a winner through him. Tommy Lasorda made it so much fun to be part of that Los Angeles Dodgers, and he helped make us a winner going to the finish line. So I got to give those guys a lot of credit at the same time.
They were great. And, Rick, thanks a lot for your time. Nobody will ever forget the stuntmen of 1988. Thanks a lot for the time.
Thank you, David. Yeah, I don't want to forget them either. Thank you very much.
How great was that? Wow. I mean, Rick Dempsey was really generous with his time. It's his wedding anniversary tonight. I hope I didn't get him in trouble with his wife, but wow, that was awesome. And nobody will ever forget Rick Dempsey. And also, too, about Rick Dempsey, he didn't wear the hard helmet when he caught. Soft hat, turned back around. That's right. That's right. Mike Socia got hurt. That's why he was catching that game five in the World Series. But those two guys were a great combination and complemented each other so well. Rick Dempsey was a great backup catcher to Mike Socia in the late 80s and early 90s, especially in 1988, one of the stuntmen. So thanks, Rick. Thanks to you for listening. If you missed the interview or you want to hear it again, AM570LASports.com is where you can listen to it. Thanks to Ronnie Fazio and Matt for their help. Tomorrow night, Dodger Talk again at 7 o'clock. Newest reliever Scott Alexander will join us at 7:15. Plus, I'll let you hear my conversation with Matt Kemp when he came to town during the summer and how much he enjoyed being a Dodger and what it may mean for him in spring training. Have a great night, everybody. See ya.